Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Lance, your host of yesterday's concert. Before we get this episode started, I want to take 25 seconds to tell you about my other show, Jam Journals. Jam Journals is a podcast that takes you on a journey through music history, featuring live performances from some of the most iconic concerts of all time. Each episode recounts a different concert experience through a dramatic narrative that brings the memories to life with vivid detail and emotion. Join us as we take a trip down memory lane of some of the most unforgettable concerts in recent history. Jam Journals is available everywhere you get podcasts. Yesterday's Concert is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network.
My goal has never been to like be mysterious. You know, I don't really have a lot of mystery around me. I'm very open with my audience about a lot, so there's not really much mystery to raise for a ghost. And I lean into that, and I love that, and I think all my audience knows that like I'm always a work in progress, and like, you know, I look back at everything I was saying and releasing 5 years ago, and I'm like, wow, I'm a different person than that now. But that's what an album is. It's like a snapshot of who someone is at a certain time, and we can all learn from that. And I learn from my own mistakes and my own things, and I learn from other people's as well when they're willing to share.
Grab your earplugs for another episode of Yesterday's Concert, a podcast that celebrates live music. My name is Lance Ingram, and in this episode, we talk to folk singer-songwriter Ray Zaragoza. We chat about her new album, Hold That Spirit, and about reclaiming her story and her comfortability as an artist versus a human. Plus, we discuss why songs are the perfect 4-minute time capsule. So today, we're here with Ray Zaragoza. She has a fantastic new album called Hold That Spirit coming out. Ray, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Lance. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. It's like I was telling you before, I was reading a passage in a book last night, and it stuck out to me about your album, and I cannot wait to talk about the two of them together.
Amazing.
But first, as is tradition with the show, we like to start with some icebreakers. So my first question for you is, I know you have a little bit of a fandom with Avril Lavigne, probably from your teenage years. So if you could pick one song to duet with her, what would you pick?
Anything But Ordinary.
Okay, there we go. What about that song do you love so much?
It was like my anthem when I was a little kid, and like inspired me to want to be an artist and to want to be a singer-songwriter. And it's just like such a classic song about wanting to be anything but ordinary. And I think this Hold That Spirit is definitely like embodying anything but ordinary.
I feel like this is like the fulfillment of your youth right now. Like this is like everything you're aiming for. So
it's all come true. Oh my God.
It was perfect. Awesome. Wow. Okay. So second question, Newport Folk Festival. You're playing it in like less than like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you? Like that's
like
amazing.
12. It's like my dream to play Newport Folk Festival. So this is like a 12.
Yes. So are you going to like hang out and watch performances and everything too?
Oh yeah. I'll be there all weekend.
Nice.
All weekend. I'm going to see everything.
That's amazing. So like when you found out you were playing that, like what was the reaction?
I was like literally in a deli in Brooklyn when my agent called me and said that it was like official, and I had to like leave the deli and scream. I didn't want to like scream inside the deli, so I had to like leave the deli.
That's amazing.
So yeah, it was very exciting.
That's incredible. I love it. Okay, so Next one. You're an ambassador for Taylor Guitars. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So if you were one day given the opportunity to create your own signature guitar with Taylor, what would it look like? What would it be like? How would you design this?
I think I would want to design like a bright pink or yellow guitar. And I would want there to be like a roller skate on it. Like, okay. I want to like really just like, I want like a beachy roller skate vibe, Long Beach guitar. That's what I would do. I'd make it like just like really colorful and crazy. And
so would fun. It be like in the inlay or like where would the roller skate be?
The roller skate would be like on like the front, like right near like, you know, like right on the face of the guitar, like right on the front, like boom, like a big sticker. Okay. Like it would just be kind of like, not like ugly, but like it would just be really kind of like tacky and fun. That's what
fantastic.
I want.
One of the like roller blades or like one of the old school roller skates?
Skate. I roller skate. So roller skate.
Okay.
Skate.
There we go.
I blade a little bit too, but roller skating is where passion is at.
Have you always roller skated? Like, is this like.
I started in 2020. It was like my pandemic hobby. And now I like make music videos with roller skates all the time. And like, I love skating. It's so fun. I've been kind of scaling back on my skating a little bit because I don't want to get hurt before my tour. And I always get hurt. But
yeah,
it's so fun.
Do you wear like the wrist guards and everything too? Like, do you go full?
I do. I've in the past not because I was like, oh, I want to look good for the video. So I'll like leave out my wrist guards and then I always end up twisting my wrist or something. And then it's never worth it as a guitar player.
When I started biking, I was like, I don't want to wear a helmet because helmets aren't cool. And then I was like the very next day I was changing the song on my phone and I look up and there's a car like 3 feet away from me and I had to like swerve and miss it and I fell off and I was like, and that's why we wear a helmet.
Yeah. So always everyone out there, wear a helmet, wear your wrist guards, wear your knee pads. Don't try to be cool. Okay.
Nobody's cool.
Nobody's cool.
Real.
You're just cool. You're not cool with your helmet on. You're not cool without it on. So
there we go. Boom. All righty. Life lessons. I love it. So that's a great segue into my last icebreaker. This is a kind of a heavy one. So a lot of this album is about the expectations of turning 30 in your life. And we'll dive heavily into that today. What advice would you give yourself as you entered your 20s if you could go back?
Oh, my gosh. I literally cried on my 19th birthday. I thought my life was over. I thought I was getting old. Which is so crazy. I literally would tell my 20-year-old self to have more fun and take yourself less seriously.
Yeah. I feel like that's applicable across the board. Like everyone could learn from that, even in our 30s and 40s. Like,
oh, yeah. I'm still trying to learn how to take myself less seriously. But, you know, I'm a music artist. We're always taking things so seriously and then writing songs about it.
Well, okay, so that's actually another great segue because I was reading about this album and you were talking about like in the past you could only kind of focus on some of the darkness and that's the things that you were writing about, whereas this album you kind of forced yourself to live with the joy.
Yeah. I think like, I don't know, I think before writing Joy Revolution, which is like the first song on this record, I was so... You know, I was writing about things that were really heavy and things that I think are really important to write about, like Indigenous rights and different social justice commentaries. And my last record, Woman in Color, was about identity. And my record before that, Fight for You, was about so much about Standing Rock and, you know, rallying around Indigenous rights, which I am so, so passionate about and so grateful that, you know, I have an audience of people who is receptive to messages like that. And I continue to write songs about these things, but I also, with this record, wanted to write something that was about how it is, in a way, a social justice commentary to write about joy. Because I think so often we feel like we're not entitled to experience joy as immigrants, as Indigenous people, and as just people experiencing a pandemic, we feel like we're not allowed to be joyous. And so with this record, I really wanted to write about how joy is something that we should fight for as well. And the macro things going on in our world are very important and very real, but also the micro day-to-day things like, you know, I don't know, like a candle or like a flower or like a cold cup of water or things that just can give you joy. I think I'm also trying to learn to appreciate in my life and write songs about.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. I mean, the thing too that I picked up on listening to your music is it's very candid songwriting. I mean, a lot of it is very like open and honest, and it takes a lot of vulnerability to put yourself out there like that. So how much of that was like telling the other side of that vulnerability and producing the joy and sharing that?
Yeah, I think that this album is definitely like my most vulnerable work because it's so much about me and like my experience, whereas like my last couple records were definitely about me, but also about like the way that I interact with the world and like things happening in the world. Whereas this record is so much just about like my internal world. And I think that there takes a level of bravery to experience joy, because in order to experience joy, you have to really trust and surrender that everything else in that moment is going to be all right. I think I can be a chronic worrier, anxiety kind of person. So for me to experience presence and joy is something I'm still learning how to do, because my brain is constantly wanting to latch on to what should take us out of the present moment and what should not give me joy. And so I think that writing a song like Joy Revolution was really almost like a brave thing, because it takes a lot of bravery to be present and to experience joy.
Well, so, I mean, when you talk about like heavy subjects and people come along, it's like, oh, that song sucks. It's like, well, yeah, that stuff sucks too. So it's not so heavy. But if you're singing about joy and somebody comes along and says, oh, that song sucks, does it hurt more? Do you take that more personally because you're singing about your happiness?
Yeah, I think, you know, I had like someone say something about this song Joy Revolution where they were like, oh, that's so like new agey and like hippie and just like flower, like, you know what I mean? Like, they were very much like, why are you writing songs like this now? Like, you were writing songs like protest songs before, and now you're writing like songs that are so like new age toxic positivity or toxic optimism or things like that. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's one way to think of it. I don't think you're fully understanding my messaging around the song, but that's okay. You're entitled to your opinion. And I think that, yeah, maybe that stung a little bit more than when someone would criticize a song I was writing about something very political, because I can just chalk it up to being like, oh, well, it's a political song. It's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. But when you're writing something about joy or something about a personal experience, I think, yeah, it can hurt a little deeper. But I don't know. I am always very welcoming to criticism of my music. I think that I've always really leaned into writing songs about things that are a little nuanced or a little bit, you know, not, they're not going to be for everyone. And I think that's kind of like, I don't know, for me, the beauty of songwriting is it's not going to be for everyone. So that's okay.
No, I love that. That's fantastic. But I mean, as you're writing and you're pouring out this vulnerability, do you ever have to dial it back and be like, whoa, that's really honest. Like, am I really going to put this out there in the world?
Yeah, I think that like I've been processing that with this album for the first time, because I didn't realize how personal and heavy this album was until I started talking about it. Because I think when you're writing the songs, you're not really thinking about the fact that you're going to release them. Like, it crosses my mind, but when you're in the zone of writing, you're just writing. And so many songs that us songwriters write don't get released. Like, most songs don't get released. You know, we have these albums every couple years that have 12 tracks on them, but there are like tens and maybe even 100 songs I'm writing throughout the year that don't make the cut. So when I'm writing, I'm just writing. And then you choose the songs of the album, and then you decide to promote the album, release the album. And then you look back at everything that you're going to be talking about in regards to the album. I'm like, whoa, there's a lot of personal stuff on here that I'm going to talk about. And I think that there's a reason why I have become an artist. And I think it's because I am very comfortable with disclosing parts of my life and with sharing and being someone who can talk about personal things and hope that because I talk about them, they can help others. And I think some people aren't as comfortable with sharing. And so since I'm so comfortable with sharing and I feel like I'm a pretty open book, I feel like that's the reason I was put on this earth to write music like this. And maybe it'll help other people who cope with things like, you know, this record talks about eating disorders or like mental health, breakups, broken engagements, and, you know, social justice. And so, yeah, I think that I try not to shy away from it. But of course, sometimes you're like, wow, I'm being very open about my life.
Well, I mean, that's the interesting duality of being an artist, is like, your, like you said, your purpose is to express yourself. Your purpose is to put art out into the world for others. I mean, not just necessarily for others, but for yourself. Like, you would not be being true to yourself were you keeping that in. However, that is kind of the benefit of it, is that you inspire others to create more art. You inspire others to take action in their life.
Well, I think that for me, like, consuming music and seeing other artists and how honest they are about their internal struggles and reading their stories is what's helped me through my life. You know, art heals. Art has healed me. And so I feel like it, with my records and with my music, if I can do that for other people, that's my job, or that's like an amazing gift. And so, yeah, I think that art is like breathing. And I'm the kind of person that loves to nerd out as well, where it's like, when I hear a song, I want to hear what it was about. I want to hear the story behind it. I want to watch the interviews. I want to listen to that artist. And I think for me as an artist, I don't really have a lot of, like, my goal has never been to like be mysterious. You know, I don't really have a lot of mystery around me. I'm very open with my audience about a lot. So there's not really much mystery to raise for a ghost. And I lean into that, and I love that. And I think all my audience knows that, like, I'm always a work in progress. And, like, you know, I look back at everything I was saying and releasing 5 years ago, and I'm like, wow, I'm a different person than that now. But that's what an album is. It's like a snapshot of who someone is at a certain time. And we can all learn from that. And I learn from my own mistakes and my own things. And I learned from other people's as well when they're willing to share.
So that's exactly what I was reading last night. It was Ben Folds' autobiography.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how artists can warp time, because you take a 4-minute song and you try to span an entire life or an entire event into that, down to that 4-minute thing. And so that's what he was talking about, how you're basically taking this thing, like, no moment in your life just happens in a bottle. Everything is built upon the previous thing. And that's what he was saying, to take it and confine it to a verse, chorus, bridge, and expect people to live with you in that is absurd. Because, I mean, that's literally 4 minutes of your life that you're experiencing 40 years of theirs. And so for me, hearing your album and the general theme of it about reclaiming yourself and expectations that have been put on you your entire life, I was like, oh my gosh, that's it right there. Like, you're literally, but you're doing that at the same time. That's the challenge of the art, is to find a way to bottle up everything into 4 minutes and inspire somebody. Like, I was like, that's like, when I was reading that last night, I was just like, my mind is blown. Like, this is perfect. Yeah. Like all the art was just hitting at the same time.
Yes, that's so it. I love that. That's so how I feel. I think, like, it feels like a time capsule. Like, every song is like a time capsule. And I'm like an overly nostalgic person. Like,
same.
I'm always the friend who's like, remember that one time we did that one thing? And they're all like, no. And I'm like, what? And like, I'm always like, yeah, when I like miss someone, I'm like, remember that one time where we did this and da, 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 da. Like, I'm like so nostalgic. And so music has made it so that I can like kind of bottle that nostalgia into 4 minutes and then revisit it and remember what it was like to experience that. And then to see how it transforms later, because there's just like, if you're not creating during times in your life, how do you have the material to remember it? You know, I think I'm so caught up in like memory and you know, things like, I don't know, my favorite movie is Coco, you know, and all about the generations and how all these generations have new stories and new layers. And I'm like, you know, how cool would it be to like have like listen to the album that like my great grandmother wrote or something. And I'm just, sometimes I meet people out in the world and they have such an effect on me. And I almost feel like itchy until I write a song about them. You know, I'm like, oh, they are so interesting, or they really inspired something in me. So I need to record this. I need to make sure I remember it. And so I will write a song about it. And so I love that. I love that. That 4 minutes of capturing a year, capturing 6 months in 4 minutes is, it's my favorite form of storytelling. You know, I think for me too, like, I'm all about that instant gratification, you know, as we all are as millennials or whatever. And for songwriters, I feel like I can take a year and put it in 4 minutes, which is so much easier than like, one day I want to write a book. I would love to write a novel. I'd love to write a book, but that's going to take a long time. But writing something in 4 minutes or like capturing something in a short form is so fun to me and so exciting.
While you were talking about it, are you the type, this is how I am. I hate to even call myself a creative. I feel so pompous saying that, even though that's silly. But like, I was talking to somebody else about this the other day, but like, I watched Bo Burnham's Inside. Yep. And the whole time I was watching it, I wasn't thinking about like, everything he presented was great. Like the final outcome was fantastic. I loved it. Mm-hmm. However, the whole time I was so envious of the process that he had to go through. Mm-hmm. Like all those little clips of him like adjusting mm-hmm. cameras and thinking through, and you see the whiteboard with all, that's what I was envious of. Like I was like, that's the part of creativity that I love. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, when I journal or I do things and I go back and listen to a final product,
yeah,
what I enjoy thinking about is the process getting there, not necessarily the final outcome.
Cool.
How do you feel about like that kind of thing? Because you're talking about nostalgia. You have to go back and listen to your old music and think like, yeah, this is what led up to that event, or this is the surrounding things of that.
Oh, yeah. It's all about the process. You got to love the process. I think that's why I couldn't be an actor. Like when I was a kid, I thought I was going to be an actor. Like I grew up doing like child acting and stuff. My brother is an actor to this day, but I didn't want to go that path. And it's because I never liked the process. I don't like auditioning. I don't like rehearsing. I don't like, you know, the like highlighting lines and all that. Mm-hmm. But with songwriting, I love the process. I would just do the process and never do the finished product if I had to. There's something really amazing about all the steps of being a songwriter or being an artist. And that's really cool when you talk about thinking about Bo Burnham's Inside and all the process. Because also for me, the process of filmmaking and of adjusting the cameras and all those things, that's like, that sounds horrible to me. That sounds so tough and like so much work. But the process of songwriting and promoting an album as an indie artist, like all the email outreach, all the like the gear, all the guitars and the notebooks and the lyric changes and all of that is so exciting to me. So like you have, no matter what your art form is, like you have to love the process. It's all about the process. 'Cause once the record is out, it's already over. It's already time to start the next process for the next thing. And so it's kind of weird and sad. Once it's out, it almost feels like the process is done, which is not, you know, it takes on life of its own. Like I feel like then the process starts for like everyone who's listening. But yeah, you gotta love the process.
Well, and that's you talking about as an indie artist, you strike me as somebody who is a feeler. Like you seem like you're connected to your emotions.
Oh yeah.
As an indie, I mean, and that's not a bad thing at all. Like I think that's probably the healthiest way to live is being connected to your emotions as long as you manage them well.
Right.
But you know, that's what being an indie artist, it has, the highs have to be higher and the lows have to be lower, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like, I mean, so how does that translate into your process? Like, do you just, you find it unbearable? Like you go 100 emails unanswered trying to promote your album. Does the next day that affect the song you feel?
I mean, I think things go in seasons. I'm luckily, like, I'm an indie artist, but I do have, like, a team around me. You know, I have, like, manager, publicists, and things like that. I just don't have a record label. But when I was first starting, and I was first, like, getting my, you know, my start as an indie artist, as a DIY artist, like, I sent every email myself. Like, every single outreach was just me. And, you know, I think at that time, I was a little bit, like, delusionally optimistic about myself. And I think you got to believe in yourself as an artist. Like I would send all these emails and, you know, I got my agent from a cold email and he said I was like the only cold email he'd ever like answered. And my email was like, I don't know, it was very short and sweet, but I'll reread that email and I'm like, wow, like I had very intense blind faith in myself that I deserved an agent and I deserve a manager. I deserve to play this. I deserve it. And I don't know. I think maybe it was because I grew up in the entertainment industry and I just felt like this sense of like belief in myself as an artist in a way that I don't feel about in other aspects of my life. Like I feel like it's almost easier to believe in myself as an artist, a musician separate from myself, than to believe in myself as like a human being. Like I think those are the human things are the things that I've been working on more, because I can promote myself as like Razor Goes to the Artist, but then thinking about the vulnerability of like social situations or love or body image or things that are so personal and like outside of the artist self that I can't like just project onto the artist self. Those are the hardest parts for me. So I don't know. Maybe it's like just like growing up in entertainment. But
well, why do you think that is? Why do you think you have so much more faith in yourself as an artist than a human?
I think it's because literally from when I was 5 years old, me and my siblings started training as performers, and we were celebrated when we performed. We were celebrated when we did something well in a performance aspect. And it's been like our barometer of success since I was a kid. And I think there's also like a level of anxiety that I have as a human being that I don't have as a performing artist. I have no stage fright or stage anxiety. I am the most centered in myself and without anxiety on stage than I am anywhere. And I think a lot of artists experience that. There's a sense of freedom that you get in your art that you don't get on a daily basis. And that's why we create art. Mm-hmm. And I think that it bleeds into, you know, our human stuff. But there is something about the magic of art that we get to almost escape that voice in our head that's telling us this or that on a day-to-day basis. And I'm still learning how to integrate all of that. But the stage has always been the stage, and the guitar and like with a pen writing has been my safe place. That has been my place of escaping my anxiety my whole life.
Wow. That's fantastic. Oh, and I mean, that goes really well with like the theme of your album. Again, going back to like, I mean, and that's what, when I was reading about it and I was identifying with it, it was this, I mean, especially as someone who grew up in the South where you have very clear standards of like, this is how your life is going to go.
Right.
Like, you know, because that's, I mean, just for people who don't know, the theme of the album, I mean, overall, is kind of like reclaiming yourself when you've been told your whole life, this is what it would, or yeah, how about you tell
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly.
Album, you tell it. Like,
yeah, the album is so much about expectations, and it's about exactly what you said, like reclaiming your spirit, who you are, and your sense of self after, you know, you've been on one path that you thought you were supposed to be on, and then your path changes, and just like kind of discovering who you are from the dust of something that didn't work out. Yeah, it's a lot about expectations of women. I was 29 when I wrote this whole record, pretty much. And I was engaged and I was very much set on getting married by 30 and getting on a very more or less traditional path for myself. And I was determined to then, you know, tour less when I got married and truly shift my life. And then when it all fell apart, I realized that that's not what I want right now. I don't want to stop touring. I don't want to stop playing live. Like, this is I love my life. And, you know, the relationship had its dark moments. It had its great moments, but it was just not the path I was supposed to be on. And then I kind of woke up and felt like so bare and raw. And I was like, well, then what's my path next? And so this album was kind of all these songs that were written over the course of that year that I was processing all of that before, during, and after. And it's really about rediscovering who you are when all the goals and the benchmarks that you had for yourself are no longer valid.
Well, that's a lot of raw emotion that you're sorting through. And I mean, and heartbreak's hard, no matter like what the terms are. And so, I mean, that's how cathartic was it to be able to express these thoughts, knowing that you will have inspiration on others, but also just the fact that like you're reclaiming yourself, you're rediscovering who you are and what your actual aspirations are, and realizing I've been lying to myself for all these years.
Yeah. I think it's like, it was painful because I think I still do want a lot of these things. Like, I still do want to get married one day. I still do want, you know, I don't want to tour forever. Like, there's a lot of these things that are very true to this day. Like, those expectations, I think, still exist inside of me in many ways. I did want that relationship to work out, but, you know, for many reasons, it was not supposed to. And I think that the message I want to convey in this record is that it's okay to want these things. It's okay to want whatever you want, but making yourself miserable over them is not worth it. And telling yourself that you are not beautiful or valid because you're not married by 30, or because you're not engaged by 28, or because of this or because of that, whatever your path is your path. And for women, we always have all these rules and benchmarks and specific things we're supposed to hit. And if you don't hit them, you start to feel like you're worthless. And I started to feel that way. And so I think that with this record, I want to show young women or anyone that your path is your path and it's beautiful and whatever you choose. And we should be celebrating women not only for relationship benchmarks, but also for, you know, anything like for like paying off debt or for graduating or for, you know, buying a house by themselves or raising a child by themselves. Or there's so many other paths for women, but I feel like there's only certain ones that are really publicly celebrated, which is why I really wanted to talk about in this record how I used my wedding money to make this record. Because so often we feel like there is one path of celebration. We don't really normalize celebrations of any other kind than a big wedding. What about a big album? Like, what about self-funding a creative project? That's also a very valid way to use your savings. You don't have to only, you know, do this traditional way. And I'm not knocking that way. Super, super stoked about every one of these big weddings. Please invite me. But for me, like, this was my path. And I just want to show women that whatever your path may be, like, it's beautiful and you should be celebrated for it. And there's no reason to be down on ourselves because our path looks different.
Mm, that's wonderful. And one of the things, so I had a daughter like 2 months ago, and that's the whole, thank you. You'll probably hear her screaming at some point during this, but that's what the whole time I was listening to it, I was framing it through her eyes. I was like, especially like the song Strong Woman, like I was thinking about like, as a dad, how can I give my daughter this life? How can I provide her a better way than a lot of women today are getting, like her mother, or not that her mother had a bad life, but just giving her more opportunity than her mother's generation had. And so to me, I think it's the inspiration of that is what's beautiful. And it's like you said, it goes so much bigger than just your story. I mean, you're speaking to a generation of readjustment, realigning our perspective on these things.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's like, you know, like young girls, like for me, like when I was a young girl, like I there were fed so many things in the media about what we're supposed to want, what we're supposed to look like, or what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to behave. And I felt for a lot of that. And I think a lot of that is why I've had so much struggle with body image my whole life. And so many women have struggled with body image, and not just women. All people have struggled with body image. And so much of that is because, you know, corporate America is trying to sell us stuff. And if we make everyone hate themselves, and they'll buy more products to change the way they look or to adjust this or just that or to diet or whatever. And all of that was making me sick. It was making me crazy. And if I can, you know, have that message to a young girl who's maybe kind of in that place where they could go either way of really going down that path of that more difficult self-talk, or starting to really, which is so amazing in this new generation that so much more body positivity is happening. If my song can lead them in one way or the other, like that's so amazing and so beautiful. And I just would love to have more young women not have the same experiences I did when I was a kid, because a lot of that was about wanting to change myself rather than embrace myself.
Hmm. One of the really cool things that I loved about your publicist, she sent, or you did it, it was a breakdown of the songs, like the meaning behind it. I loved that. I ate it up. But one of the, like the song Joy Revolution, like I pulled a quote from it. It says, "I have definitely been one to think that I have to earn rest and earn joy, but that way of thinking has caused me pain and anxiety." That, I mean, that's such a great perspective on society today and just where we are. Like there is no, like, I feel guilty like when I spend the afternoon at home with my daughter instead of working. And I mean, again, that's reclaiming our story and saying like, no, this is, I'm never going to get a 7 week old again. I'm never going to have a daughter that's under 2 months again.
Wow.
I have to savor this moment. And like, to me, that's just, I mean, again, that's like the themes of this album are so heavy, but they're also so beautiful in the way that you presented them. And the, like, when you really start to process these things, it really is a beautiful statement that everyone could benefit from something like this.
Yeah. We're in such a hustle culture, hustle mentality. And that relates to like, you know, all of that, all the aspects, like whether it's hustle culture to feel like you have to, you know, hit all these certain goals at certain times of your life. And it's all just personally making me, you know, experience sadness and anxiety. And Hold That Spirit is about releasing all of that for me. And we shouldn't have to earn rest and earn joy. I interviewed my mom, who is an immigrant from Japan, about her relationship to joy growing up. And she said that she never thought about it. It was never a topic of conversation. That's what she said with her family. And, you know, being immigrants, they're in survival mode for a long time until you can really establish your place in society and your job and your work and this and that. And they didn't have a lot of time to, you know, kick their heels up and hang out because they were working so hard. And so I feel like, you know, being the daughter of an immigrant and my grandparents and everything that they went through, that, you know, they fought so hard for me and my siblings and the next generation to experience more joy and happiness. So I owe it to them to do that. And our joy is something that our ancestors fought for. So we better experience it.
Well, and you say all this, and this is all very admirable. But the one thing that I'm also seeing about you is you very much, I mean, it goes back to the story about how you made this album. You mm-hmm. very much seem like the person, if you're given lemons, you're going to make lemonade. So, yeah. I mean, there is two sides to this coin. Like you yeah. definitely do have that approach to life. Am I inaccurate in that?
No. Yeah. I'm always an optimist, and I'm always trying to turn the difficult things into art, you know, because I think that there's like, what else is there to do with the darkness if we can't, you know, turn it into something beautiful? I think that the past 2 years of my life, I probably suffered from more anxiety than I ever have in my life. But now I think because of that and turning it into music, I'm experiencing more joy than I ever have. So there's always something on the other side of the difficult times. And so I'm always just trying to do my best to see past it and turn it into something good.
I want to ask more questions, but at the same time, I'm like, that's such a great, like, happy, great note just to end things on. Yeah. I'm like, let's roll with it. Like, let's end right yeah. there, because that's yeah. such a good yeah. way to end right there. I love it. Ray, thank you so much for chatting. Do you have anything you want to say about Hold That Spirit? Like, is there anything we can add to this? I love the album. I think it's, I do. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to ask another question. Forgive
it. Yeah.
So this album is I like to view albums as chapters in people's discography, that they're an evolution of the artist.
I love it.
This is definitely a massive, in my opinion, progress from your previous two albums. It seems like a massive step up. How do you feel about it?
I love this album. I think that as an artist, there's an idea of yourself you have in your head. It's almost like this cartoon rock star that you're trying to become. And every album you get closer to this like cartoon rock yeah. star in your head. And I had that moment where I was playing these songs on stage and I was like, I think I am my cartoon rock star. I think I'm really getting there. I think like the artist that I aspire to be is starting to be the artist that I am. Mm. And that's a really exciting feeling because I've been working really hard over the past 10 years of honing my songwriting, honing my guitar skills, my singing, and trying to become the person that I've always wanted to be as a performer. And I feel like it's happening. And I feel like there's songs on this record that I've dreamt of writing. And I owe that all to my collaborators, because there's so many amazing female collaborators on this record. The record was co-written and produced all by women. And they brought things out of me that I didn't know were there. And Anna Schulze, who co-wrote and produced Hold That Spirit, Not a Monster, Sweetheart, Garden, she really, I just texted her. I was like, she's my song therapist, because she's able to like touch on and press in these tender parts of me and help me like excavate them out and put them into music, where maybe I would have shied away from those things when I was creating on my own. And then she has this like really cool pop rock sensibility to her, and she's an amazing electric guitar player. And she brought that out in the songs, and she brought out an edge in these songs that I think is so cool, that I've always wanted to have in my music. And, you know, Connie Lim, Milk, AG, Texada, Robin Del Into, Ava Sapelsa, like Belinda Huang, like so many amazing women who like their relationships to their artistry that I resonated with. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I got to take a piece of that and make it a part of Ray Zaragoza. And that, I think, is why this album is so special to me. And like, I think is a step up from my last records, is because there were so many creative people with their hands in it.
So, I mean,
it is still very much a folk album, but your previous two albums were very much more the traditional style of folk.
Yeah.
But this is it is a dynamic shift in terms of that. Did you find yourself resisting that progress, or was it more like let's just go into this?
Oh, I resisted. I there were a few songs on this record where I was like, that's not folk. We probably should just leave that off. And then I was kind of like, you know, and then a lot of these songs, because they had different producers, I was like, maybe they don't really go together. They're not cohesive. We should separate this, make it two albums, or I don't know, like, just it doesn't all go together. But then I listened to it down, and then I listened to some of my favorite records, and I was like, you know, that's okay. It doesn't have to all be so specifically folk. And right now in the folk genre, in the Americana genre, everything is really being so expansive, and the definition of folk is so expansive and diverse and different. And so just because something was folk before doesn't mean that it's not now. And I sent it to my folk radio promoter, and I was like, LOL, this isn't a folk album, is it? Like, you know, I was like really like kind of like putting it down as like not a folk album. And he was like, oh, this is definitely a folk album. It's still a folk album. And I'm like, yeah. So it's fun to like get to push the envelope of genre while still staying true to like your roots. Cause I still love being a folk artist. And so, you know, yeah.
It's not like you have to stop playing the old songs. Like they're still there. They still live.
Exactly.
There we go.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Ray, thanks so much for chatting today. This has been a pleasure. I'm so pumped for the world to hear this album. It's fantastic.
Oh,
I really do
so
love it.
Much. Thank you for talking to me and digging into everything. That really means a lot.
I'm Lance Ingram, and this is Yesterday's Concert. Thanks for listening to another episode of my show. For more live music podcasting, check out our other show, Jam Journals. If you're feeling kind, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and check us out on all the social media platforms. Email us at info@yesterdaysconcert.com or visit our website, yesterdaysconcert.com. So until next time, give us a subscribe, tell your friends, and most importantly, take care of your shoes.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.